You need to, you, companies need to have this compliance program or have visibility into their data almost at their fingertips. So those are the things that get me excited and rather fired up.
That was Vince Walden, CEO of Kona AI. This is Tom Fox. Welcome to the award-winning Data-Driven Compliance. In this podcast, we will discuss how to use data to improve and enhance the effectiveness of your compliance program, creating greater business efficiency, all leading to more return on investment for your compliance program. Join host Tom Fox as he explores how data will drive your compliance program to the next level. This podcast is sponsored by Kona AI. And now a word about Kona AI. Kona AI is the leading AI-driven solution for anti-corruption, risk, and compliance professionals. Our easy-to-use software and flexible, secure deployment models drive fact-based decisions that focus on the risk areas that matter to the regulators and your business. Whether you are looking for a solution that sits in the cloud or on-premises, Kona AI returns lost money to your company's balance sheet and spots high-risk payments to third parties in half the time and half the cost. Conduct better evidence-based risk assessment. Reduce investigations costs. Enable your compliance team to present risk in a timely, data-driven, fact-based manner. Register for your free demo at konaai.com or email info@konaai.com. Today I'm joined by Jag Lambda. Jag is the founder and CEO at Serta, who developed a new tool which will enhance data-driven compliance through the use of AI. I know you'll enjoy this episode. Everyone, this is Tom Fox back for another episode of the award-winning data-driven compliance. Doesn't that sound good coming out like that?
I like award-winning data-driven.
Yeah. I'm thrilled to have back Vince Walden, founder and CEO of Kona AI. And we are going to take a deep dive into recent remarks from Acting Assistant Attorney General Argentaria around data-driven compliance, the DOJ's use of data, and what that means for you as a compliance professional. So Vince, I'm going to set this up a little bit. ACI has an annual FCPA conference in DC, traditionally the week after Thanksgiving, and we get a lot of pronouncements from the regulators, both the SEC and the DOJ, at this conference, sort of looking back and indeed looking forward. And this year did not disappoint in that arena. And we had remarks which, while all-encompassing in a year review, I thought were perhaps more important about looking forward. And I'm just going to read a few of these because I got incredibly excited with two or three sentences. Quote, "I'd like to turn to our use of data. In the criminal division, we are going above and beyond in our effort to combat white-collar crime. We are not just waiting for companies to self-report or witnesses to come forward or for anomalies to reveal themselves on a one-off basis. Let me be the first to tell you that we have proactively used data to generate FCPA cases, and we've only just gotten started." Now, she goes on to say, end quote, she goes on to say a lot more, but frankly, Vince, I heard more in those four sentences that we can literally unpack and explore than I've heard in a lot of others. So I don't know if you felt the same way, what your thoughts were, what the buzz at the conference was like, because you were there, and maybe start off with that and then we'll go into a deep dive.
What's funny, Tom, is that she's not the actual first to say that, as she quoted. The day before, Matt Galvin with the DOJ spoke at the Data Analytics Conference, and he said almost the exact same thing. We are looking at data to proactively identify risks and cases as well. And he said that many times. But of course, Matt Galvin is focused on advising around the use of data analytics, whereas Nicole Argentieri, she's one of the prosecutors. So it's refreshing to hear her say that. You'd expect it from Matt Galvin to say that because that's his role at the DOJ. But when you're seeing the prosecutors also say it, as well. It's really, it's cool to see that the tides have changed in the culture, the expectation that companies, that the DOJ is using analytics. And when we say analytics, it's not just reporting on historical facts. It's looking at transactional details around third-party interactions. And it's refreshing to hear that the DOJ is using that across the department.
Vince, the lines I quoted obviously were meaningful to me, but we had a equally significant enforcement action in Q4 involving Albemarle. And one of the key areas reported in the DPA that we have now gotten a little more information on was the company's use of data analytics and their remediation. What did you see from that DPA or settlement resolution, which led you to maybe conclude how important the use of data-driven analytics was for Albemarle to get, frankly, a superior result?
Yeah. First, let me go back and even quote Assistant or Acting Attorney General Argentieri's comment on Albemarle that she cited at the conference. And she said, and I'm going to read just like you on this, forgive me, Tom, but just as we are upping our game when it comes to data analytics, we expect companies to do the same. She said, in fact, we cited Albemarle's non-prosecution agreement for its use in data analytics to monitor and measure its compliance program's effectiveness as an example of its extensive remediation. I loved that. And she goes on to say, companies have better and more immediate access to their own data, and you can be sure that if misconduct occurs, our prosecutors are going to ask the company what has been done to analyze and track its own data, both at the time of the misconduct and when we are considering a potential resolution. And Albemarle was a classic example of post-event. And again, I think the allegations stem back years ago, but it finally settled this year. But in their non-prosecution agreement, they list, it's a grocery list of items, and certainly it wasn't only just the use of data analytics, but it was very clear that their sentence was reduced among factors such as, and they listed all how they changed their business process, how they drove compliance throughout the company. But then it said for their use of transaction monitoring of their third-party interactions. And it was one of the first times ABB's settlement the year before mentioned it a little bit, but not as explicit as Albemarle's. And I think one of the things that I'd like to emphasize is that I think the community now, I don't think the community, the compliance community, picked up on that line as much as you and I did. And of course, you and I are very passionate about the use of analytics, but that was a huge deal for Albemarle. And again, I think we're going to be interviewing, I'm excited because I think in early January, you and I are going to be interviewing Andrew McBride on Albemarle. So we'll hear firsthand what he has to say about that. And also, we're going to have ABB, which are the kind of the two leading companies, ABB and Albemarle, that have been using data analytics post FCPA event or remediation. And you know, it'll be fascinating to see how those companies have been integrating their analytics program. It's great. I've been able to work with both of them firsthand, and it's been a privilege to work with them. And I think hearing from their perspectives, I think will be really interesting.
Vince, I'm really glad we set this conversation up with two separate quotes. Each one of us had one, because the quote I gave really spoke more to enforcement. The quote you gave really spoke more towards remediation and corporate use of data-driven analytics. And so I really wanted to use that introduction to ask you, what should companies take away from both the speech and perhaps even the Albemarle FCPA enforcement action around the expectations of use of data-driven analytics in a compliance program?
Yeah, I think there's still confusion among the compliance community of what should we be doing? What is this? What do we mean by data analytics? And is it, you know, tracking how many trainings we do? Is it tracking how many policies and communications we make during a year, or tracking how many investigations or how many third-party due diligence checks? You know, the answer is not really. Now, that's par for the course, but that's not what the DOJ means. Specifically, if you go back to the DOJ 2023 guidance and it asks, does your compliance program monitor third parties throughout the lifespan of the relationship, not just during the onboarding process? That is such an important line because, again, most compliance officers and companies that I see that are not using data analytics spend a tremendous amount of time and resources and money doing the third-party due diligence and background checks. And yes, that's good. That is absolutely necessary. But then ask yourself, and I'm talking to the compliance professionals in your audience, where does the fraud happen? Does the fraud happen during a due diligence check? No. The fraud happens when you're actually doing business with the third party. When you're providing the service, when you're billing and invoicing and collecting cash, that's when the fraud happens. And so the DOJ has now caught wind of that and knows that. And now, obviously, of course, you need to do the due diligence, but gosh, shouldn't you know of your high-risk vendors or the contract terms that you put in place? Shouldn't you know whether they're effective or not? And so my ask or recommendation is that you got to do the third-party due diligence, but think, all right, how do we measure risk? So go back to your risk assessment. Say, do we have compliance or corruption risk in these areas or markets, or even, you know, whether it's corruption or circumvention of controls or contract compliance or even sanctions risks? Where do we have our risks? Map those to the data sources that say, all right, what do we need to bring transparency into those risks so that we can monitor it, and then put those effective tests in place. Part of the reason we started Kona AI was that over the years we've collected hundreds, it's probably over 1,000 now, but hundreds of tests and algorithms and thousands of keywords in multiple languages around what is an improper payment, what is a bribe. And through machine learning and some of the artificial intelligence that we've been able to encapsulate, some of it with the MIT research with Integrity Distributed, we've been able to identify what's that profile of an improper payment, so that companies can benchmark themselves against it. And that's the kind of risk-based approach where I can take hundreds of thousands of payments or transactions, right, and risk score them from 1 to 100,000 so that you only need to look at the top 10 or top 20 riskiest. And that's what companies like Albemarle is doing. That's what companies like ABB are doing and many other companies that we work with. But in general, that's best practices. And I think that's the DOJ's expectation. So apologies for that long answer, but boy, it's so clear in my head now. It's just that, how can this message get out?
Vince, one of the things that struck me about her remarks was, I've been talking about this for many years. Others have been on the cutting edge of data analytics and the use of data-driven compliance. You mentioned Matt Galvin and certainly others. But it struck me her remarks may have evolved the DOJ thinking that data analytics is no longer cutting edge. It's now an expected part of a best practices compliance program. And when I have seen that in other areas of compliance, it then moves to table stakes. And when I say table stakes, I don't mean from the regulators, from those with whom you do business. So that if you're a smaller company and want to have a subcontract with a major energy company, they're going to want to know your data analytics capabilities because they're going to want to audit your compliance program, or at least have the right to audit that. And they may come looking, and they may want to look at some of what you have turned up, and that it moves from something the regulators are talking about to something that business people start talking about. And they start expecting that in contracts, and they expect that of those with whom they do joint ventures, those with whom they contract, and maybe those customers expect that. So I wanted to ask you once again with a long-winded introduction, do you see that evolution as well as, hey guys, we're not talking cutting edge here. We're talking about what we expect to see. And if that's correct, what are some of the data analytics practices that you've already seen in other parts of the criminal division that could be applied going forward?
Yeah, I think in that two-part question, what we established table stakes, and then what do we see the DOJ doing? First off, the table stakes, it is now, I think, you know, 20 years ago, people said, oh my God, we can't get email. That's too hard for an investigation or review. And now email is old school, right? And now actually we're onto ephemeral messaging and WhatsApp and capturing that. But think about the e-discovery process back when people were starting to look at email 20, even 30 years ago. It's strange that it took that long to get accounting data, which is where the actual payments move, not just are talked about in the scope of the DOJ, but it's here and it's now been used and it's been cited in the non-prosecution agreements. The other thing I want to comment on, and Matt Galvin made this comment specifically, he's made it before, but he also made it at the FCPA Data Analytics Summit this past, back in on November 28th. And he said, look, the table, he goes, look, don't tell me, and again, I can't quote him quite because I'm going from memory here, but he talked about the cost effectiveness. It's not that hard or expensive to do anymore. Yes, it's going to take IT resources to coordinate with you, but nowadays, when he built BrewRite, it cost several million dollars to build and organize over 3 to 4 years. Nowadays, you can do this for less than $250,000, sometimes even less than that, sometimes less than $200K, to bring that transaction monitoring and transparency to the business for large Fortune 500 companies. In my case in point, I'm doing Fortune 10 companies for less than $200K, their entire procure to pay, multi-billion dollars in transactions. So it's not a size thing that matters anymore, and that you can do this cost effectively. The DOJ knows that. Matt Galvin knows that. And if you sit back and if you think your defense is, oh, it's too expensive, we can't get our data, our IT is too busy, that is the wrong answer to give to the DOJ. Because, excuse my language, they're going to call bullshit. That's not acceptable anymore. So table stakes, yes. The DOJ comment was interesting. I loved how, again, Nicole, acting attorney general, Nicole Argentieri, she mentioned that, and I really wasn't aware with this. I knew they were upping their game with analytics, but they're actually, healthcare has been around forever, healthcare fraud. They're using some of the techniques and some of the data scientists at the DOJ, she commented, from the healthcare criminal division and using it for FCPA and using some of the same statistical, probably link analysis techniques and transaction analysis techniques that they were using at the healthcare division, using it for FCPA. So the point there being, yeah, I think definitely the DOJ is upping their game. And when we heard Matt's speech, we know that they are investing in technology and resources to up their game. And gosh, shouldn't you as a company at least be monitoring your own transactions? Because if DOJ is, or they're monitoring your peer groups, don't you want to have at least as good of information they have? And because it's your data, you have better. You're really behind the ball. If you are this is how I define my market. If you are a company with over $500 million in sales, and I typically say over a billion, okay. If you are a global company doing over $1 billion in sales globally, and you don't have any type of transaction monitoring for your compliance program to look for anti-corruption, you are behind the ball, and that's scary. Now, you can play the game as long as you want to, but saying that you have a good third-party due diligence program in place isn't going to cut it. Saying that you have good policies and procedures and controls and training in place may a little bit cut it, but you will be up against the wall. The key, though, I know compliance officers want it. It's making the case to the CFO, and it's making the case to the business that they need it. And truly now, though, this is not a multi-million-dollar thing. This is a $250,000 or less thing. And you think about Albemarle still paid, what, $115 or $116 million in fines, let alone the cost of attorneys and the forensic accountants that had to do for that remediation. This is a drop in the bucket compared to a monitorship or a larger settlement. Yeah, a long-winded answer, but I'll pause there.
Let me ask you to take off your compliance hat and put on your fraud examiner hat. Huh? What would you say if I had a $1 billion corporation and I did not have a data analytics capability to look for fraudulent payments or employees stealing money through fraud from the company?
Yeah.
Would your answer be any different, or would you tell me I'm an even bigger idiot?
No, I would say for compliance people, the big stick is DOJ. Okay. For a CFO and for finance and internal audit professionals, the stick is, hey, let's go find hidden money. And so I make this market from when I talk marketing a little bit, and I know who, depending on my audience, there's two ways to go about it, to think about this. There is the make your business better or keep you out of trouble argument. Both work. The finance person wants to find hidden money. And when you think about it, Tom, yeah, the compliance person can be a rock star. And I know firsthand when I helped Matt Galvin at AB InBev build the BrewRite platform back in my consulting days, we found hundreds of thousands, actually millions of dollars of recoveries and improper payments. Nowadays, when we deploy a Kona AI software platform, we typically always find either things to investigate, controls that are circumvented, or just straight up hidden money. We found a $6 million payment once that was just needed to, now you don't typically get to recover them unless it's a vendor you can credit, but you find hidden money. And so if you think about the numbers, if you take $1 billion or $2 billion or $10 billion of disbursements over the past year, if you can't find at least $250,000 of recoveries or issues or fixes or stopping the bleeding, then what are we doing? These types of platforms also pay for themselves, not just demonstrate an effective compliance program. And I think that message also needs to get out a little bit more. It's like this will pay for itself, not only in the recoveries, but also just the efficiencies. And I think Andrew McBride at Almamar will talk about how his team is just so much more efficient now with having data at their fingertips rather than having to go chase invoices or documents or what have you. Yeah, there's definitely an ROI measure, not just a risk avoidance measure.
Vince, was there any other thing that struck you as interesting from Assistant Acting Attorney General Arjun Tiari's remarks?
I would think about the last comment was, I love the fact that she talked about Almamar and she brought that up. I thought that was interesting. She also said, I think she talked about some of the their use of analytics around the Bolivian foreign minister who did 70 months in prison for corruption and how they proactively used data analytics to identify that and the bribes to the third party. They used that proactively to bring it. So I think that was interesting as well. That theme around upping their game is, I think that what stood out the most. I can't go into too much more because I think we already covered. What impressed me with her comments was the fact that she brought up Albemarle and that she's just not waiting for companies to self-report. They are actually using data analytics proactively and leveraging within their department, within the criminal division, different groups, healthcare, and who knows what else. I'm sure securities, and they're using some of the same analytics techniques.
Vince, I want to explore what I started with, which was the four or three sentence paragraph that I quoted, because I found that from an enforcement perspective. So this is going to be the DOJ looking outward, incredibly insightful. And that was, we're not just waiting for companies to self-report or witnesses to come forward or even anomalies to reveal themselves on a one-off basis. That tells me that the DOJ is creating a data analytics capability of its own to data mine public data that is available from U.S. public companies who have to extensively report anyway. And so it's really going to give the DOJ more information, but it's also going to be, what are you going to do when you get that phone call? This is the Department of Justice. We'd like to review these parts of your compliance program. You get a little letter from the SEC. And it strikes me that we will see a different quality of enforcement because of the DOJ capabilities. Do you have the sense that maybe they are really moving in that direction, or have I just taken this to the X-Files level?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because AG Argentieri, she said both public and private. So public being anything submitted via Edgar or the SEC, but also private information, which who knows what that could be, I'm sure it's probably if they investigate one company of an industry, they can leverage that if you're in the same industry or what. But that it was both public and private, which was interesting. And there's no doubt that I think the DOJ has upped its game. Last year, they hired Matt Galvin, who was an advocate. And I don't know what he's doing, but I'm sure he's making some changes and embedding technology at the DOJ and helping drive that data-driven kind of analytics program. So my plea to companies is at least be as good as the government. And I know companies can be way more efficient. So at least be as good as the government, and it doesn't cost that much. It's not that, now it takes time and resources, and also takes a process mentality, not a project mentality. So this is not like an audit. You don't do data analytics once and then it's done and you put it on a shelf. Oh, we did data analytics. No, this is a business process. Just like your third-party due diligence. You don't do third-party due diligence once and then think that you're done and then any new third party doesn't get checked anymore. It's a continuous business process. So is the monitoring of your transactions and your third parties or your employees or your customers or distributors. And how do you want to effectively measure your compliance program success? Well, you have an index and you show improvement over time in the quality of payments, the fewer investigations as a result. It all just drives with that transparency.
Indeed, we had an enforcement action from the CFPB against the Bank of America, who did exactly what you described, tried to do data analytics as a one and done. And even the CFPB said, no, it's an ongoing process. You can't turn it on and turn it off right, like BOA did.
So it's not an investigation. You know, I think as attorneys, and I was as a consultant, I'm used to a project. You do a white collar crime investigation that has a definitive start. And stop is when you put the pencils down and you stop billing or you stop putting time to that code. That is not, you know, that works great for investigations. And we use, like I use Kona AI, many service providers like Kroll and JS Held and Alvarez and Marcel use it to stop to support investigations. But in the context of a data-driven compliance program, it's a process. It's not a project.
Well, Vince, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode, but I wanted to end by asking if our listeners wanted any more information on Kona AI or yourself, what might be the best place or places for them to go?
Ah, thank you, Tom. Yeah, I would encourage folks to visit our website at www.konaai.com. Take a look, and there's some really interesting videos, especially how we're using generative AI to push dashboards. My prediction for 2024 is that we'll be using I know this because we're doing it, but we're going to be using chatbots to push your Power BI or Tableau dashboards, no longer clicking. That's the future. And you can see a demo on my website. So I encourage people to take that. And if you have any specific questions or thoughts, feel free to reach out to me, vwalden at konaai.com, or my head of sales, Matt, M-A-T, at konaai.com. And we'd be glad to talk and collaborate with you. So thank you, Tom.
Vince, I wanted to just add this data-driven compliance, the award-winning data-driven compliance has been a ton of fun for me to do as a podcast series. We started the year with you, and now we've ended the year. This will be our last episode for 2023. Wow. I can't wait to see what 2024 will bring for data-driven compliance.
Oh, we've got some surprises for your audience. The stuff that we're innovating soon and that will be coming out in 2024. Again, the theme is better, cheaper, and faster. AI, generative AI has just made it even more cost-effective and easier for professionals to provide a data-driven compliance program.
I can't wait, Vince.
Thanks. All right. Take care.
This is Tom Fox again. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the award-winning Data-Driven Compliance. This will be our final episode for 2023, but I hope you'll join us again in 2024, where we continue the award-winning data-driven compliance, literally giving you the most cutting-edge information on how to use data analytics in your best practices compliance program. If you've enjoyed this episode, I hope you'll subscribe, rate, and review wherever great podcasts are listened to. The award-winning data-driven compliance is a production of the Compliance Podcast Network.